It's the opening track from the 2022 album called White Jesus, Black Problems. Fantastic. Negrito is coming to WOMAD in March. The album tells an astonishing story that came to light for Fantastic during the pandemic. He's with me now. Hello.
Hello. Greetings from Oakland, California.
Thank you. Tell me the story.
Well, the story is a quite unusual one. I'm not who I thought I was all of this time. You know, I thought I was someone that I'm actually not. I was exploring all these websites online that profess to know our knowledge and our DNA and our roots. And the first thing I discovered is that my last name was complete fabrication, and my father had made up a complete lie about who he was, and he in fact had another family and had abandoned, and it was very, very traumatic. And then I looked at my mother's side and I found free Negroes, that's what it said, paraphrasing here, during the time of slavery in America, that I was a descendant of some free Negroes. So I wondered, how did that happen? So as I dug deeper and I combed through all the paperwork of Ancestry.com, I discovered that my people in Southern Virginia had become free because of an illegal union between a white indentured servant Scottish woman and a black enslaved man. Now, these are my seventh generation grandparents. Now, this, of course, was extremely shocking to discover something like this. But as soon as I discovered it, I thought, you know what, these are the people that I want to be related to. It's the most punk rock thing I've ever heard, you know, an interracial couple on a tobacco plantation in Southern Virginia, and they live to talk about it.
And because the first thing you found out about it was that your ancestor, Elizabeth Gallimore, the Scottish woman, was charged with unlawfully cohabiting with a Negro slave.
Yes.
What happened to her? What happened to them?
Well, I like the way you say Scottish. But you know what? That's unfortunately, I never. There's nothing that says what happened to them. It just says the thing that the smoking gun, so to speak, was this paperwork that says Elizabeth Gallimore is not charged. They said presented was the word of the day in Amelia County Court, Virginia, for unlawfully cohabitating with a Negro slave belonging to Henry Jones of Virginia and having several mulatto children. So I couldn't find out that the only thing I found out was that she somehow ran away, and the sheriff, as it said in the paperwork, caught up with her 10 years later. So it's very kind of ambiguous. I couldn't figure out what happened. But the most important thing was just that paperwork that I found that stated the obvious. That was it. And I thought, you know what? I can do something around this. I can really write an album, tell a story. And maybe I have to embellish and fill the blanks. But the most important thing was that I shared these people's DNA, and they were, in fact, my seventh.
Yeah, it's a very Romeo and Juliet story, isn't it? What difference
is
it? What difference has it made to you?
Well, it's made a huge difference. I think it made me really understand that the whole idea of race is just a construct. Somebody made it up for their own financial gain, for their own personal gain. I mean, it's not even real. And that's something that's really impacted me. Also, the idea that these people didn't ask anyone's permission. They just got it done. And I thought, wow, this is fascinating. You know, these people 250 years ago, they got something done that was seemingly impossible, which was a forbidden interracial union on a tobacco plantation between a Scottish woman and an enslaved African man. I thought this, just that idea alone was brilliant and very inspiring. It really inspired me and continues to inspire me to be a descendant.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain reinvention involved, and you've reinvented yourself before as a consequence of a very serious car accident in 1999. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, I was driving down the street and the lights went out, basically. I never really remembered what happened because I was in a coma 3 weeks, but it was a car accident in Los Angeles, and it greatly impacted my life and my right hand, which is, essentially the playing hand. And that gave me a second chance and a new lease on life.
And how did you change your music to accommodate your damaged hand?
Well, I don't know if I changed the music as much as it changed me.
Yeah.
I knew that, I'd be limited. So I wanted to use that to my advantage. And I think I've lived my life that way. And it really goes back to my seventh generation grandparents. I thought, wow, they had disadvantages, but they used it to become something. Their obstacles became their fuel and their source of motivation. So I've looked at it the same way through my limitations on my hand, music. The spirit's got to talk.
You didn't play music for years, though, after the accident, did you?
Well, I would say, I think there's a gap there. I think I did, in fact, start join some punk bands because I couldn't play. But I think I really quit all of music for a period of time, and I gave up and sold all my instruments, and I became a farmer, a marijuana farmer, and got married, settled down, and then it called me again, so I came back. But I've definitely quit this thing before, and when I wasn't feeling the inspiration, I don't want to do it if I'm not inspired.
You mentioned your father, who'd made up a story about himself.
He did.
What was the story he made up, and who was he really?
Well, he was really an immigrant from the Bahamas, and he had a totally Christian name, My dad was born in 1905. He was 33 years older than my mother, so he created this, my surname, which is Defrepolis. Can you imagine making that up? Like, you're sitting in a room somewhere in 1930s or wherever it was, and he invented this name. And I think that's really where I got the title White Jesus, Black Problems from. I thought, wow. I mean, the problems that, and the obstacles and the, this yoke of like this idea of white supremacy in the 30s, my father's idea to combat it was to create a new identity. And he said he was like from Somalia and had this fantastical name, and he did all these incredible things, when in fact he was not. And I understand why he did it. I think he didn't want, especially in the 30s, he didn't want to be a victim. And I got it. And it's become part of the fabric of who I am, too.
How did you find out that he had made so much up?
Well, just through the same ancestry.com. I mean, there's so much information on there. And immediately I found my relatives that I still haven't met them. And they're from the Bahamas. They're in Miami. They're all over the place. But he had hid them from us, and quite amazing. I plan to meet them this year, and it was a completely different name, and they had all of his pictures and pictures. He had a son and pictures of his mother. I've never seen these pictures.
Wow, how extraordinary. There were 14 children in your family, right?
There were 14. Yeah.
And
religion.
Are they all on the same page as you with regard to your father's
history? I mean, I think some people just haven't really talked about it. It's 14 people. They're all quite different.
So you,
I don't know what they think.
You
they
ended
think
up,
some of them are... Oh, go ahead.
Well, you're obviously not close to all of them.
No.
Because you
not
ended up in the foster system. You ran away from home when you were, what, 12?
12.
It's pretty young.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty rough. And I knew that... in order to survive, I had to do what I had to do. I think I was a lot like my dad. I didn't want to be a victim. And I think that's been the theme of my life.
So what did you do when you were 12?
Well, I just roamed the streets of Oakland, and the Bay Area was quite a fascinating place back then. And I ran into good people, I mean, to be quite honest. And I know some of those people now to this very day.
And
same people.
You eventually made quite a career in the music business. This is before the accident.
Yeah, I did something. It's still up to debate what it is, but
what?
I don't know what I did. But yeah, I did. I was determined to be a musician, and I'll never take no for an answer.
What is the urban farm that I see that you run called the Revolution Plantation?
Revolution Plantation. I love that word. I got that from my grandmother. She was an amazing person on my mom's side. But yeah, just the idea is self-sufficient, independent. We can do it. If you want to know what's in your food, grow what's in your food. I think there's nothing more revolutionary than planting your own food. I think it's the path to freedom.
And so describe what you're doing to me.
Well, what I do is it's a space for people in my family, people that they bring that, you know, we find this healing through agriculture. We find this healing and this power through giving back to the earth and then letting the earth provide for us. And I've also turned it into a market, and it's a quarterly market where people can come and enjoy music, food, pet adoption, just the camaraderie of like creating a small village. And there's no charge, it's completely free. And if you're a vendor, you come and you sell whatever you've made or created, and you keep all the profit. It's just my way of creating space for people to thrive and to elevate their humanity.
And this is in Oakland?
I don't want any credit or rewards or anything for that. I just think it's something that you should do. You know, if you want a strong community, you got to be a part of it. If you want something to happen, you know, you got to make it happen, you know. If you you want to help people, just do it. Stop talking about it.
It's good to talk to you.
I'm a big fan of this class.
Look forward to seeing you at WOMAD.
I'll be there.
Fantastic, Negrito. Here's another track from that album.
So I said, oh, baby. Sweet Betty. the free.